You're listening to Maneuvering Mondays, a podcast about transforming work culture.
This is the second part of the episode, and in this part, we have invited one or more guest experts to share their best advice to Marie from Zebra Apps. Your hosts today are AK
and Ivana.
And for the second episode of Chapter 3, we've invited Mark Peter. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here. Thanks for the invite.
We're happy you're here. And you coach teams on self-management and holacracy. And these are concepts that we've talked about a few times in this podcast, but they were really elaborated that much. So I would be really curious to hear more about both what it is that you do and how you see these concepts.
Yeah. So I guess there's even a difference between self-management and self-organization. Self-organization, an example of self-organization is holacracy. So what I do is I help teams self-organize within a company. So self-management would be giving a team all the autonomy to think of whatever or to come up with whatever business they want. Self-organization sits within a company, and holacracy itself is a purpose-driven organizational model. So you don't work with traditional managers or directors or a CEO, but you could say that when you work in a holacracy, then purpose is your boss or is your new boss. So in a holacracy, everyone, every circle, which is almost comparable to a team, they create their own roles to achieve the objectives of their team or circle. And eventually your team is working towards the purpose of the organization. And basically I help, in my work, I help teams to basically change from a more traditional way of working with managers, with team leaders, to the holacratic model in which they work in autonomous roles that they come up with themselves. So that's in short what I do.
Thank you, and thank you for clarifying also the difference between self-management and self-organization. Really interesting. It's a great profile for this show.
Yeah, hopefully.
Well, let's get a little bit closer to the story part that our listeners listen to for this week. I would be curious, Mark Peter, to hear, based on what you've read for today, what happens in the story part?
So yeah, I think this chapter, as the others, is full of metaphors. So stuff happens, and you could think of a deeper layer or things like Marie dropped her cinnamon bun into the basement. You could see this as a mistake. And in her team, they make her feel really bad about making that mistake. So, and then immediately I think there's something wrong with the team culture. So apparently there is a team culture where it's not accepted that you make mistakes. So you're penalized, there's a negative consequence. So she needs to go downstairs and find the cinnamon bun, and then obviously she encounters Willy, and then she starts to think about what is all the sugar doing here in the basement, and she starts to suspect Willy of spreading all the sugar over the tables in the canteen. And then I thought, well, there is another metaphor. The sugar on the tables, they might be, let's say, the sugar coating on the company system that doesn't work. So, you know, by placing those soda machines, you could say you're trying to fix a system that doesn't work with soda machines or with a sugar coating.
Mm.
And I think all that people are trying to do is try to find control over the situation, find control over people, and blame people for the stuff that is happening. And for me, it's again a sign that there is not a culture of psychological safety. And I've heard that, I think, a couple of chapters ago. And I think one of the most important things is to create a culture of psychological safety. And and it's quite clear that it's not happening throughout the story and in this chapter.
Thank you for that summary. I am curious about the first thing that you said. That's when Marie's team finds out that she dropped the cinnamon buns into the basement. They make her feel so bad that she actually goes down to the basement to fish them out. How would you see the difference between, you can say, transparency and openness and talking about problems, and then a culture of accepting and supporting each other when mistakes happen?
So what the difference is, you mean? Or
Yeah, because here we see that they can at least talk about mistakes now, but still it makes Marie feel bad and guilty about the mistake that she made.
Yeah. So the reason she feels unsafe and feels it's a negative consequence that she needs to go down to the basement, etc., is because her teammates don't give her a feeling that they together can learn from the mistake that has been made. So if a mistake has been made, it doesn't matter by whom, you should as a team say, okay, what can we do together to prevent this mistake to happen again? If you all zoom into that one person who made the mistake, then almost automatically that person feels unsafe. So if you take the mistake, put it in the middle of the group, and then sit around it and say, okay, what can we learn? Then you provide the opportunity to grow together, to develop together, and that eventually has the effect of people feeling loyal to the team and feeling loyal to the company and feeling satisfied together after such a learning opportunity. So that's the difference. Is it an opportunity to learn as a team, or is it the mistake that one person made and that one person needs to fix?
So if they had all, once the team had found out that she had dropped the cinnamon buns and left them down there for a couple of days, if they had said, well, you know what, let's all go get them, would that have been a better solution?
Yes. I mean, they could have gone down together and they would find a big mess in the basement and they'd maybe say, okay, how can we clean up this mess together?
Yes. I want to talk more about the mess in the basement.
I just a quick comment to that, because it's funny you mentioned metaphors. Today on my notes, I wrote, like, is the pile of junk in the basement a metaphor for all the problems in this company? And the way Marie, her initial reaction when she dropped the bag of buns was to just leave it there, I think that says a lot about, like, if we speak metaphorically, it's a way of just like letting the junk build up in the basement and not really working with the problems, but just continuing.
Exactly. So somewhere they started to talk about, you know, we need to fix the people system. I want to rephrase that, because I don't think you need to fix the people, but you need to fix the system. So I would like to detach the two words. Don't fix the people. They are fine. I mean, they they arrive in a company. I'm a big fan of the self-determination theory. You know, people, they knock on the door of a company all with the same basic needs. They want to find autonomy, let's say mastery and purpose. So they want to be in charge of the work that they do, how to get from A to B. They want to develop in the direction they want to develop in. And they want to have a setting in which is purposeful. So, you know, by canceling that Eslo product, for lots of people, that was the purposeful work that they did within the company. You know, you need to have purposeful work in a company for people to remain. It's one of the three things they look for. If you take that away, people resign or people get demotivated, etc. So when they come in, they're all fine people. It's the system in which they start to operate. They get bashed. You know, you take away the purposeful work, you take away the autonomy, because there's lots of control. Everyone needs to control others. So all these things get bashed, with the result that people get demotivated, people start to leave the company, etc. So if they would have gone down to the basement as a team, all looking for autonomy, mastery, and purpose, they would see that the system is not right, you know? And I would even say, because I read somewhere that they wanted to redecorate the basement as a new server room or something, I would say, don't even do that. Maybe redecorate the room as a place where, for example, new ideas are born. You know, in the basement, in the roots, in maybe even, you know, that's where new ideas are born. That's where you come together. And then the higher you get in the building, the ideas are created and grow and go out of the organization. So take that opportunity to, you know, fix the system and let the people strive or create a context where they get can actually accomplish autonomy, mastery, and purpose.
I really like that metaphor, starting with the roots, investing in the very essence of what a company is, and then letting that get absorbed throughout the whole organization like water through a tree.
Exactly. And that creates growth, development, learning. You can take all the metaphors, and it's not only for growth, but it's to flourish as well. You know, the tree flourishes. It not only grows. You know, it's not the unending growth, but you need to flourish as a company.
Can I ask more about the purpose part? I'm curious, is purpose something that can be created by the organization or by the leadership of an organization, or is it individual to each person? Is there a collective person per purpose, and who can define that purpose?
It's everything. So you know, for example, Patagonia, as an example. The company has put lots and lots of emphasis on its purpose, you know, changing the world as our only shareholder, et cetera, et cetera. So people are attracted to that kind of big purpose. But in your day-to-day work, you wouldn't get up every morning and say, wow, Earth is our only shareholder, look at us. You know, it's much smaller than that. So it's how do we treat each other within the team? What is my contribution to a day's work in the team? Do we help each other when someone is going through a difficult patch? Those kind of things. And that's really a people thing. For that to flourish, you need a system in which it can flourish. And there's so many, and this is now my, you know, how you call that, my forte. There's so many traditional management hierarchies in which, let me start differently. The traditional management hierarchy does not have autonomy, mastery, and purpose in it. I mean, people will achieve it somehow, but it's not thanks to the management hierarchy. It's almost despite the management hierarchy. So I would say there's lots of other, and in my case, I'm specialized in holacracy, self-organization. There's lots of other models, systems that you can put in place that will actually give people the environment in which they can achieve that purpose.
I would be curious to also talk about the sugar stunt in the canteen, where we have the situation where there's sugar thinly spread on all the tables, and then this banner falls from the sky, and Marie has a reaction to that. What do you make of that story?
I forgot what was on the banner. Was that written?
You have sugar on your hands.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah. So, well, the way I look at it is that the system is covered in a layer of sugar. And people actually see through that. So, if we talk about psychological safety or the self-determination theory, you can't create that when you install free soda machines or give everyone bean bags or ping pong tables or foosball tables. I mean, it's a nice sugar coating, but if the system is not right, then you won't achieve it. I mean, it's nice to have a ping pong table, but you won't fix the system with a ping pong table or with that sugar coating. That's how I read the part.
We also learn about, we have this other employee, Shane, who was headhunted from another company, and we hear how his motivations for joining was the higher salary, and that this Willy person finds out that he's making twice the amount of money. So where does a factor like salary come into play when we look at this self-determination theory?
I'm a big advocate of equal pay for equal work. So I helped companies to create a salary model based on equal pay, because there's nothing worse than finding out, like these, like Willy, that someone is getting twice the pay you get for the same kind of work. I mean, that creates an unsafe or psychological unsafety. Mm. So it has a real negative effect on team culture, on how to work together. It again creates a culture of blame. So I would advise zebra apps to really look at how is our salary model built? Are we just, because I know it's difficult when you have to get scarce skills into the company, but look at your culture before skills. Look at equal pay before you get afraid you don't get the skills in, because it can hurt more than it brings, and it does, because there's another employee that is completely demotivated, so you actually fill a hole with a hole.
We also see this conversation between Marie and her boss Mark, who is the VP of HR, where she finds out that he actually knew about this salary discrepancy, And the reason he uses for why he thought it was okay was that Willy has been with the company for a very long time, so he was unlikely to leave, and therefore they did not need to pay him more to retain him.
Yeah.
What do you think it says about the company culture that loyalty is used in this way?
Yeah. So another example is the use of performance bonuses. I would say skip all the traditional performance bonuses, but reward people for their loyalty. So maybe every 3 or 5 every so many years, give them an extra pay rise because they're so loyal. And the traditional thinking is, if you give them a loyalty fee, then probably they'll just lean backwards and don't do anything anymore. You know that. But the other way around, what happens probably now is that Willy leaves because of the unfair pay difference, and the company actually fills a hole with a hole. And in fact, there is nothing more costly than losing a experienced, well-integrated employee because of such a difference. You might as well give them a bit more salary for them to stay, and pay a little bit less for new employees.
Yeah, so you're basically flipping the script completely and saying that rewarding loyalty makes more sense.
And even for Willy, this could be, we say in Dutch, the drop that lets the bucket overflow. So then probably this guy would say, okay, he starts to look around and sees, okay, I can earn 500 euros more in this other company. Okay, I'll leave. But if he would know that next year he will get his loyalty fee, he'll probably hang on a little bit. I mean, it's just one part of the story. Yeah, that's the salary part. I mean, there's lots of other stuff to fix here. But
if you were put in this organization, Mark Peter, where would you start with fixing things?
I would actually start small. The problem with big change programs is that they always fail or not succeed enough. So I'd say start at team level and see what you can do within a system that is not working yet. I'd say get your team together, advice from Marie, go downstairs to the basement and see how you can clean up that mess, you know, and it's only the basement then, you know, but what can we do just to clean? And some other parts of the company might say, okay, what are you doing in the basement cleaning? But even cleaning something up with your team is an improvement. It makes you stick together as a team, and there's some positive energy and you can build on that again. The mistake I think many companies make in change is that they want direct impact. They want, we do this and then we get this and we need this direct impact. I think maybe, I don't know, 3/4 of your impact is indirect. So by cleaning the basement, the direct impact is, okay, we've cleaned the basement, but the indirect impact is maybe, how other teams look at you and see how that team works together, how they and how beautiful the basement is now. And now we can go there with our team as well and have a, I don't know, some workshop or whatever. So it's the indirect impact that many people actually overlook within change.
That makes sense. I would also be curious to ask, in this system that we see at Zebra Apps, what kind of room to maneuver does Marie actually have, that since she is actually part of the system?
Yes, I guess everyone is part of the system, and in such a management hierarchy, there is sometimes not a whole lot of room to maneuver. Sometimes they say you need to create your seat at the highest level. You know, you need to get a seat at the executive committee or wherever. You know, you need to put HR on the agenda there. But before you are there, I mean, good luck. That will take some time. I'd say take it to your own level, your own area of influence. Maybe experiment with bits of self-organization in your own team, giving autonomy, just creating roles, autonomous roles within your own team, and start experiment with that and build on the positive experience that you have as a team. And before you know it, toxic in a positive way. Mm. You know, it creates this movement bottom up, which I believe in. So maybe at first you think it's very little space to maneuver, but it's the space that you have control over. So start there.
I also want to talk about Shane, who is this person who took the job for double the salary of Willy, who Marie and Eric find in the basement trying to clean some of the mess up down there. Mm-hmm. Do you think that there's any redemption for Shane, or is he just a person who will always go for the money?
Well, I think there's a reason why he moved to this company, and that's probably not the salary. So there was something else going on. I mean, research shows that people don't leave. I mean, it's the conversation you have, you know, at parties and when you change job, and then someone says, "Oh, probably you earn more in the other company," and then it says, "Yeah, I earn 500 euros more." But the reason why people leave is mostly because of other stuff, like your relationship with your manager, autonomy, lack of autonomy. How clear is your job? What are your responsibilities? Blah, 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 blah. What are your targets? So I believe in the top 20, salary is number 19 or so. So I think Shane is a perfectly all right guy once he is in the right company system. So, yeah, would he... I mean, if you build a salary model based on equal pay, would he then leave? Would we have to double the salary of Willy, or would it be somewhere in the middle? I don't know. Would he leave because of that? I don't know. But I think the objective is to work towards this equal pay and then see who is really financially driven and who is there for purposeful work, or etc.
Yeah, I think we see a lot of the people, both some of the people who've been at Cipra for a long time and also some of the people leaving. I think they seem like very purpose-driven people, and they're leaving for other companies. And then we have Shane here who left a company which we know is working more they had a cultural program as well over there. So yeah. I'm really curious to see how Shane will fit in to this company. Because I think he did say, like when he met Willy in the basement, I feel like he did say some quite, he said some things that I don't think are cool. Like he was talking bad about the previous manager and he was telling about how he makes double the amount of money.
Yeah, right.
Which tells me that... this guy is might be trouble, but I think it's nice if we can keep an open mind about Shane and see maybe there is something else. maybe didn't like the way they did the culture program in the other place.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I'm obviously very curious about what are the company values, what were they. So I'm just thinking about stuff that I wish would be in. And I think one of the most important things is what I try to live by is the golden rule. It's treat others like you want to be treated yourself. And if that was the question you would ask when you talk about salary, you know, when you salary differences or teamwork or how to treat each other, if you just have this golden rule as a company value, then we'll see if Shane is accepted or leaves or Willie leaves or stays or, you know.
But I do think it's a good point that this whole way of thinking in terms of self-organizing or changing the way we organize to focus more on people that could help Zebra apps in terms of retaining talent and avoiding that people leave for other jobs. I think that would be a good path forward. But I wonder if the management team is ready for that.
Yeah. So the question is, should we or should Marie ask for official approval to start a change program into self-organization or whatever, or just start experimenting in small in your team and go from there? I would say try the second. Be the corporate rebel a little bit within your team, and then go. Because I think these guys and women in higher up, they're not ready for it to let go of control, or at least what they think is control.
I talked to a person 2 weeks ago who was an executive at a company where they had implemented self-organization across the organization, but he never told anyone. So he just asked the individual teams to start experimenting, start working that way. And then 5 years down the line, it was working for them. And that's when they started talking about, this is actually called something. This way of working.
Yeah. That's a great way of also giving ownership to the people, right? So they don't feel like it's a change that forced, but something
definitely
that they actually did.
Definitely. And it's less scary as well, because there is this vibe around self-organization, self-management, that it's a big anarchy, you know, everyone does whatever, and that's everyone is running all around like headless chickens. But it's not. So if you don't call it that, I think it's a very, very good way. And just call it experiments, or just trying to improve team performance or whatever.
Yeah. Being a corporate rebel is the way.
I think Billy is a bit of a corporate rebel if he was the one who made the sugar rebellion.
Yeah, definitely.
So there's hope.
I like Willie.
Mark Peter, as we start rounding off, I would be curious to hear what do you think happens in this story after this?
Yeah, so I'd say Marie, I mean, I think she wants to do well, but she turns inside. She's just thinking about stuff and assuming stuff, and she's not actually going to people and start an open conversation about things. And so I hope that she would just go to every single one she has suspicions about, you know, the sugar related incident, just go there and talk to people in an open and fair way. So it's lead by example, you know. Otherwise, you maintain the culture that is there. It's scary, but I mean, this is I think the way forward.
But I like this because it's also back to that we do need to take some responsibility also as individuals. And I feel like the heap of junk in the basement is an example that no one really at Zebra apps takes responsibility. Everyone just like, we know it's a pile of junk, but that's just how it is and no one does anything. So I think it's the right way forward.
Yeah. And how we started, it's, you know, take the mess in the basement, not as someone's fault, but as a learning opportunity for the whole company or smaller as your team. It's not your fault. It's something that happened, and together we're gonna fix that and learn from it.
I like that.
Me too. Well,
Mark Peter, if our listeners have any follow-up questions for you or want to learn more about you, where can they find you?
They can find me on LinkedIn. Most definitely, I'm on there quite a lot. I write about stuff as well, so I'm always looking for feedback, and always looking for like-minded people. So LinkedIn, I'm always available.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show.
It was a joy. Thank you very much, and I'm so much looking forward to the rest of the stories.
Thank you.
You're listening to Maneuvering Mondays, a podcast about transforming work culture.
What are your thoughts on Marie's situation? Have you had a similar experience? And what would you have done? Join the conversation on our LinkedIn page and let's maneuver Mondays together.